afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, December 11th, 2017. Good afternoon, everyone, and good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
It's good to be back today. We had a little bit of a snafu with technology on Friday, so had a little bit of a replay, but we are here live today, and we're here live, but I can't say gold was alive today. Kind of along the still mounting, seeing some pressures for gold and silver. Gold was down $6 today at $1,243. Silver was down 14 cents, $15.79. Platinum was stronger by 2 at 892, and palladium was stronger by 1 at 1,008. You have the USDX today just holding down 0.01 at 93.89, and you have crude oil trading stronger by 0.60 at 57.96. And the paper markets today, let's see, the Dow was up 56 points, 24,385. The NASDAQ was up 35, 6,875. And the S&P was up 8 at $2,659. 10-year yield today, 2.39%, holding not a lot of change. Euro was 118. That was stronger by 0.12. Bitcoin finally hit 17,000, but of course that's due to a lot of the futures trading that began yesterday, and that pushed the price to these levels. And we'll see what how high it'll go. It isn't even worth talking about anymore. It's just, all right, it's just going to go up and up and up, and we'll wait until it starts to go down, down, down before we start talking about it again. So, not true. We'll still mention it, but we'll reserve our excitement for when we see gold trading at those levels. So, right, Al?
Oh, we won't show a bit of jealousy or anything like that, Melody. We're going to just sit back and we're going to be very, I don't know, sophisticated about all this. You know, the truth is, it drives you nuts, but what is Bitcoin today? Hang on just a second. $17,175 bucks, according to World Coin Index. All right, that should be about it right now. All right, current price. It's a 24-hour high. Last 24 was 17,409, almost 10, 24-hour. That doesn't make any sense. 24 volume. Oh, 17,000. Okay, 24-hour low. Excuse me, $17,042. $15,042. High for the day for the last 24 hours is $17,410. Low for the day is $15,042. They've got a $2,000 spread in the last 24 hours. I mean, this is the sort of thing we are witnessing, a phenomena that is, you know, it's scary. And I don't mean it's scary because it might fall. I mean, it's scary because it might rise and I'm not in it. It doesn't make sense. It's not rational. It's not logical. There's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of this, and a good chance we're going to see a significant decline. But I don't know. This is certainly unnerving. I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago, it was $9,000 a coin. Now it's $17,000. Just spectacular, incredible. I don't know that there ever been another mania like this one. Did even the tulip mania rise this fast?
It's all relative, but certainly in the numbers of today's the modern world, certainly I can't think of one.
No, nothing. Modern You'd have to go back to something like the tulip mania back in the, what, 1600s or 1300s? I don't remember. I think it was 1300s, wasn't it? Do you know?
Oh, off the top of my head, it's, I don't know the exact year.
That's why they give us necks. So we can't, off the top of our head, we can't remember. And off the bottom of the neck, the bottom of our head, well, we can't see because our neck's in the way. Any case, we don't know, but it would have to be, it's another mania like this, just incredible. And it can't end well. It seems a virtual certainty that this is going to end badly. And a lot of people are going to lose what they've invested or speculated in Bitcoin. But
well,
you
know,
can't
you
help.
Know, first...
I say those words, and I don't know if I'm going to live to eat my words. Am I going to live to eat my words, Melody?
You know, I don't know. But, I mean, the idea, I mean, someone told me this morning that, you know, the first thing, you know, the first reports was everybody's dumping their gold to buy Bitcoin. Well, I disagree with that. I mean, sure, we've seen pressures on gold and silver, but I don't think it's because everybody's rushing to dump their precious metals to buy Bitcoin. I mean, you know, some might
be.
I don't think that's a reason,
but it doesn't disturb me if it is. If you believe in gold, is now's the time. Take advantage.
But the whole point is, they're creating this sort of perception that people are running to dump their gold to buy Bitcoin, just so you have more people coming into Bitcoin. You know, they're manipulating because they know they need the people to come in. The reason that keeps Bitcoin rising is because people keep buying it, pushing the price up. That is what makes the price go up. You know, it's a typical Ponzi scheme. They need that new money in there to keep it going. So again, it changes the perception that people are out there dumping their gold. I don't believe that for a moment. But those who do that, that's fine. But what I find more fascinating about this whole idea is when you hear the comments from the people that are investing, like, well, you know, Bitcoin corrects downward, but then it comes back. It recaptures, you know, the gains. It's never going to go down. My neighbor is just put his, you know, $50,000 into the stock, into Bitcoin, and I'm putting money into it, and I don't want to hear any negatives about Bitcoin. These are the comments that are so dangerous, because these are all the signs that it's the same comments that you hear with other bubbles, and it's the same, you know, comments that you hear when something is getting to the point where the masses are getting in there, and it's shortly thereafter that things correct. It's the same as what we heard Rockefeller getting his shoe shined during the Depression before the crash of 29. His shoe shine boy said and asked him about a stock, and maybe he should get that stock. And he says, when that shoe shine boy was talking about stocks, I knew it was time to sell. And it's very similar to the comments that you hear talking to people is, you know, we're hearing the same thing. That's what I find interesting. And again, these are signals that, you know, things could change quite rapidly.
There are also signals that those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it. Here's an article from CNN Money, and the headline is The Hidden Fear Driving the Market Surge. And it says, fear of missing out.
Fear can
influence the stock market in powerful ways during booms as well as busts.
Absolutely.
The panic of 2008-2009 sent the Standard & Poor's 500 crashing to 666, wiping out trillions of wealth. Fear is playing a less obvious role, helping to fuel today's red-hot stock market and Bitcoin market. In this case, it's the fear of missing out. I mean, there's a situation where I know it's stupid. I mean, I believe it's stupid, everything. And yet, it's like all the other kids can play, why not me? You know, you become a little bit frightened, wary. I'm not frightened, but anxious, whatever. How are you going to explain to people that you missed the Bitcoin? You know, the Bitcoin mania.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's people that are talking fantastic numbers, fantastic, just absolutely impossible numbers are being discussed, and yet they're talking about them, and I know what it is. I understand. I mean, everybody really does. You buy in, and you say, oh, my God, it's going to 50,000. No, it's going to 100,000. No, it's going to $1 million a coin. I've seen people who think it's going to go to a trillion, for God's sake.
Yeah, but
I mean,
Al,
it's
you know
just
what?
Nuts.
This is
it's
the same.
Insane, and you know that, but still, you look at it, and it takes some discipline to resist.
This is the same mentality that we had, and I talked about this before on this program, the same mentality that we had during the tech rise.
That's exactly
in
right.
In the late 90s.
That's
and,
exactly right.
You know, it created a lot of day traders. That's doing the same thing right now. People are beginning to trade all these cryptocurrencies out of their home on their computers, you know, and hey, if they do great, fantastic. But most of them don't do the one thing that they should do. If you're doing fantastic, protect it. Just don't let it ride until you lose. But it is the same mentality. It's never going down. And the one thing that you have to ask yourself, that people should have asked themselves, with the tech boom was, do you really believe they're going to let you walk away with all that money? And the question and the answer to that is no. They're not going to let people walk away with all this money. Absolutely not. So same way with
the
tech
boom. Well, I know
that's
the truth of the matter, Melody, but when you invest in these things, you can know, I'll be able to get away, Melody. I can pull this off. This article from CNN Money, it concludes, of course, it's never good reason to buy something, stocks, bonds, or Bitcoin, just because everyone else is doing it. That's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a race. This is like lemmings going over a cliff. They are all happy and joyful and following the lemming in front of them, and they're going there and they're headed for a cliff, or it certainly seems like it. It says you shouldn't just buy things because everyone else is doing it. That's what's happening. Investing should be backed by solid fundamentals, not irrational emotions. Yep, everybody knows it, but you can get into these things, and it becomes a very seductive phenomena. It's the sort of thing where you sit back and say, oh my, yeah, I know it's crazy, but you know, how can you turn your back on it? Here's another one from Zero Hedge. Everyone in the stock market pool, that's the headline. In the third quarter, household nonprofits stock holdings jumped to 36.3% of their total financial assets. This is the highest percentage since the 2000 dot-com bubble. In other words, there's more ordinary people invested in the stock market than they've seen since the 2000 dot-com bubble.
The tech boom, yeah.
Yeah. The only time in the history of data, that's since 1945, that saw higher household stock investment than now was during 1999 to 2000, blow-up phase of the dot-com bubble. Note that the stock market investment peaked with major tops in 1966, 1968, 1972, 2000, and 2007. And what they're saying is when you see a phenomenon that you are looking at right now, and they're talking about stock markets in particular, but Bitcoin is the same thing, is at least similar, if not the same thing. When you see that, what you're probably looking at is a sell high moment. We've talked about it on the program a bunch of times, but you buy low and you sell high if you want to make a profit. And what that necessarily means is, if you're going to buy low, you're going to have to buy when everybody else says it's crazy, don't get into it, it's crazy, don't do it. You do it on the basis of fundamentals. You have to do your own thinking. You look at it and say, no, wait a second. I don't think this is crazy. I'm going to buy here. Even though the price is very low and nobody wants it, I think now is the time to buy. And the time to sell is when it gets to the top, when everybody's screaming for it. All right? This is just what Melody was talking about with the whichever one of the wealthy, with the billionaires that was buying the stock investor and the rest of that sort of thing. And he said when he saw the shoeshine boy is in the stock market, he said it's time to go. That's where we are right now, or very close to something like that. You know, I don't know what you can do. I understand everybody who's got Bitcoin on one level. I don't blame you a bit. Anybody who refuses to sell it, I understand how seductive the promises can be. And yet, you know, you look at history on this, and you have to sit back and say, wait a second, this is not likely to keep working this way. But everybody hopes, And nobody wants to miss the boat. Everyone is seduced by the possibility that the people are going to get fabulously wealthy off this stuff. And some people will. Some people already have. This is like the lottery. It's like Powerball. You know, the number, how much can you win? And the number keeps going up higher and higher and higher until finally people would know. You know, like me. I know I'm not going to win the Powerball. I mean, I understand that. I get that. But just the same, you put in a couple of bucks and you got a shot at, who knows, hundreds of millions. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, this isn't a couple bucks anymore. It's 17.
Well, I know. That's one of the problems.
But there are a lot of smaller priced cryptos and so forth. So, but
everybody expects to win on this. Yeah. This is not like Powerball. We're going to have one or two winners. We've got the same number or something like that. We're going to have basically a bunch of winners in theory. That's the expectation on this with Bitcoin. And people are going to say, well, I might not make 17,000, but I'll be in there with everybody else who's got $10,000 on the coin. So I don't know. It's bizarre. It is an extraordinary phenomena, and everyone should pay attention to it, not just to consider whether you're going to invest or you're not going to invest, but to see the comparison. You can read about that tulip mania in Holland back in the day, where people were paying the equivalent of 3 years' salary for a skilled craftsman for one bulb, one tulip bulb. I mean, it's just crazy. It's madness. And here we are looking at something similar right now. So from a historical perspective, this is something to observe. It's something to savor. It's something to bear in mind and see what's happening. Not because you are invested or because you're not invested, but because this is going to be a story to tell your kids and your grandchildren. Or you're going to say, I was there when they had the Bitcoin mania. And it'll be like telling them about the... And right now, you can look at this and you can get a better understanding of the tulip mania several centuries ago. Tulip mania. Boom, boom, boom. What was that like? How could they be so crazy? How could they be so crazy? We're in it right now. We're doing the same thing.
Well, I think a lot of people, though, believe that, you know, governments are going to use this in order to go to a cashless society, and that this is, you know, the stepping stone to do that. And it might very well be. It certainly has brought up digital currency as an acceptable way to trade to some degree. And again, it can also be they could be using it as a conditioning point for this. I mean, it is, and who knows? I mean, it could be the stepping stone to, you know, the chipping. It could be the stepping stone to the elimination of, you know, the cash. It could be the stepping stone to the, you know, the New World Order currency. So.
Could be the stepping stone to the next batch of commercials, which we're going to air right now. Thank you for listening up until this point. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I'm running a little silver special. We have 21-ounce American Silver Eagles. These are 2017. And we're also going to have $25 face value of the we still have some left over of the brilliant uncirculated quarters. $25 face value of the Washington quarters, brilliant uncirculated. This includes your shipping cost, $710. It's a great little package. You're just paying a little over $18 per ounce for your silver. So a great buy today for 21-ounce American Silver Eagles. And $25 face value of the 90% silver quarters, Washington quarters, and they are brilliant uncirculated, and they are really nice and pretty. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And because we had a little technical problems, we're running a little late on that. Hopefully I can get to it by the end of the day, and it'll be out either later on tonight or perhaps the first thing tomorrow morning. So you have time to get there to sign up and to await your first issue of the newsletter. And an update on the website, hopefully, our target date for the new website is the first of the year, January 1st. So we still got some things to do on that, and my computer guy said if he has all the final numbers and design changes and everything by the 21st, it will be up and running by the 1st. So we'll see if we can't get that done, and we'll make the formal announcement once it is completed. So, you know, there's going to be, you know, everything is taxes, 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 and you know, to change that a little bit, you have all these Wall Street economists are telling investors to brace for the biggest tightening of monetary policy in more than a decade. You have the world economy supposedly heading into the strongest period since 2011, of course, with all kinds of stimulus from various countries that, you know, have no signs of pulling back. But I guess the Federal Reserve meets this week for that quarter point rise that everyone is anticipating from Janet Yellen. So we might see a little pressure on gold perhaps until that happens. But no talks of the budget, no talks of debt ceiling, no talks of much coming out of Washington except Roy Moore. And with the information coming from the world economies, heading into the strongest period of since 2011, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, and all the elite banks predict average interest rates across advanced economies will climb to 1%. As for quantitative easing, it marks the 10th anniversary in the U.S. next year. Bloomberg Economics predicts net asset purchases by the main central banks will fall to a monthly $18 billion at the end of 2018 from $126 billion in September, and then turn negative the first half of 2019. So we'll see how their prediction fares heading into next year. So, you know, I think if it'll be interesting just to see how these economies will absorb if you do have this monetary tightening that these economists are predicting. So the IMF is predicting that consumer prices in advanced economies will climb 1.7% next year. That's the most since 2012. Still remains below the 2% most central banks view as price stability. So we'll see. I mean, even with the tightening, it still leaves rates low by historical standards. And we'll see if it makes any difference. You know, when you have Bitcoin now trading at 17,000, all bets are off the table anymore.
Yeah, I understand. It's getting curiouser and curiouser. I've got an article here from Business Insider, and the headline is Bank of America. The dollar is set for a big rebound after a difficult year. Against a basket of G10 currencies, the greenback lost 8% this year. Even the prospect of tax cuts hasn't made the dollar more attractive to currency traders. Right now, the market is pricing in almost nothing on taxes. Tax cuts would lift economic growth, prompting the Federal Reserve to raise rates faster than it expects. And this is coming from Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Now, it isn't necessarily true that tax cuts are going to lift economic growth. These are presumptions on this thing. And prompting the Federal Reserve to raise rates faster than it expects. If they raise rates, I'm not saying it can't happen, because it's happened despite my notions to the contrary. But if they raise interest rates, the dollar becomes more valuable. All right? If the dollar becomes more valuable, the size of the national debt is going to increase in terms of purchasing power. The numbers won't necessarily change. You got $20 trillion in there. But the question is, are those dollars worth 90 cents compared to the time when they were added to the national debt? Or are they worth $1.10 compared to what was in there before? If the dollar becomes more valuable, the national debt grows in terms of purchasing power. And the cost of servicing that debt with interest rates, with interest to pay on the debt, that also grows. And my reading is that government cannot stand that kind of growth. Government, I don't know what they intend to do with the national debt, but we've already seen some evidence that they can't pay it. It's the truth of the matter is they're bankrupt. The only thing they're trying to do is service it, continue to pay the interest on the debt, and they're not even sure they can continue to do that. Nobody's talking about paying the principal. My point is that we have Merrill Lynch predicting that we're going to see increases in interest rates, increases in the value of the dollar, and the result is going to be happy times for all. I don't think the government can take that. And the predictions that the dollar going up is contrary to the government dealing in a reasonable, rational way with the national debt. I think in order to deal with the national debt, they must see significant inflation. The dollar must continue to go down in relationship. Lost 8% this year, it's got to lose another 8%, 10%, 50%. All right, to deal with the national debt. I don't see. So I'm just looking at this, and they're saying, oh, here comes Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and they say the dollar is set for a big rebound. I don't think the government can stand a big rebound. And therefore, I am very skeptical that the government will allow a big rebound in the value of the dollar. Instead, I'd say that the government, in order to deal with the national debt, they've got to have a continued decline in the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar.
Well, it's not a matter of government to choose. I mean, I get they can manipulate, but as long as we have a fiat currency, inflation is a given. I mean, interest rates alone don't determine the value of a currency. I mean, we've had rates going up. She's been raising rates for this past year. and actually the dollar has actually gone down. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into play. You have, you know, the political and economic stability, then, you know, I mean, all kinds of factors go into this. Plus, we have world governments who manipulate currency. So what once was perhaps the equation of equaling A and B, 1 and 1 and 1 equals 2, you know, you now have all this manipulation that's going on within these currencies. And, you know, again, it just, you know, what used to be isn't anymore. Because you've got all this stimulus going into these, you know, economies, you got Japan, you got Europe, you have China, they're all full.
And all that stimulation should contribute to inflation.
It should.
Because but, what all that stimulation basically is a matter of printing more dollars or yen or euros or whatever. They're just adding more currency to the money supply that should contribute to inflation.
But I mean, but we were talking about the U.S. currency and the interest rate. So, you know, with Janet Yellen and so forth. So I think as long as we have a fiat dollar, you're going to have inflation. We have inflation. People's health insurance are going up 60-70%. When people were paying $10,000 last year, they're paying $26,000 this year. You have people who paid $8,000 last year are now paying $15,000 this year. I mean, and that's just health care. I mean, you, everywhere else you look, you have, you know, our needs. I mean, it's our basic needs, you know, that you have food. Yeah, you know, certainly it's not going up 80% in food, but you have inflation in food. They just cover it up. They just hide it, and that's the problem. And because you know what? Once they admit to inflation, Al, I think that's, I don't think they can announce higher inflation.
I don't think they can either. I think this idea that they're fighting, struggling to get to 2%, I think they're over that right now if the truth was known.
Absolutely.
And they're just, oh, we can't, we're just struggling. We can't get to 2%. I think
that's
we've been there and done that. I think
about
we're beyond.
They've been lying about inflation for 25 years. You know,
well, they lie different times about it and the rest of that sort of thing. I get that. But right now, this is something, to my mind, that's I haven't seen or haven't noticed, at least in the past, and that's where the government is claiming we don't have enough inflation. We're trying to get just 2%. What, you know, I mean, when you stop to think about it, folks, inflation is theft. They are reducing the value of your dollars. And they're saying this is a good thing. You can take $100,000, put it in the bank, and they're only going to take 2% a year. That's your tax for holding that cash. 2% of $100,000 is $2,000 a year. You lose $2,000 this year in purchasing power, lose $2,000 next year. How many years do you have to do that before your $100,000 is badly depleted? I mean, in 10 years, you can lose 20% of the purchasing power of your $100,000 in savings to inflation. You know, it is not a good thing. It's not something we should be cheering for. And yet the government says, oh, we've got to have at least 2% inflation. But we don't have that yet.
Right. Well, we have it, but they lie.
Well,
they flat out
lie. I mean, we
lie.
Don't officially have it. We don't have it officially. You know, and whether we have it or not, if the government, you know, if the government doesn't say we have it, do we have it, Melody? If a tree falls in the forest and the government doesn't report it, did it make a sound?
Or does the bear? No. But anyway, I don't know. It's, So it is a strange and but you're right. We do need a lower currency, and that's exactly what they got. And I think that's also fueling, because with a lower currency, when the dollar was too strong, you didn't have these multinational corporations that, you know, they weren't doing all that well. You know, their earnings didn't perform because of the higher dollar.
That,
now that
I'm
we've had a lower rate, look how great all the earnings are. What?
I'm not worried about multinational corporations. I have no sympathy
it's
for them. They
part,
can do what they
I'm
want.
I'm not either, but it's all part. It's,
but I'm more
but
concerned.
Al, it's all
how
part.
People have
it's all,
put their money into retirement funds.
It's all part of the illusion that they've created.
I agree. And they're running right now. They're trying to maintain a particular mindset in the people that you got to do one thing or another to save yourself or protect yourself. And it seems to me that what they're encouraging people to believe, from my perspective, is contrary to people's best interests. They want you to be vulnerable, or at least they want to accomplish a result that is good for the government, and if you people are damaged, well, too bad. Too bad for you. And somewhere along the line, just again, Trump is the Trump phenomenon. Is to some degree evidence of the public is waiting for somebody to get into public office who's actually then going to do what's right for them, not just shine them on with more fake news, government statistics, lies. Tell us the truth and try to protect us as best you can. Not the multinational corporations. The business of this government is not and should not be worrying about what's happening on Wall Street. I mean, you read the Constitution. Where is Wall Street in the Constitution? We have we the people. Government is supposed to serve we the people, not we the corporate executives, not even we the corporate investors. We're supposed to do something, figure out how to keep this country running in a way that serves the vast majority of the people. We can't serve everybody. I get that. It's never going to be perfect for anyone. But... You got to make that attempt, and the government hasn't done that in recent times. Government has betrayed the public time after time after time, and I get the impression the government is just trying to conceal that betrayal and try to avoid being held responsible for what strikes me as an inevitable economic decline, maybe a collapse, maybe a catastrophe. Who are we going to blame when it happens? Who's going to get blamed? I think everyone is going to know in the event that we have that worst case or even close to the worst case scenario. If that happens, who's going to be blamed? All right, the Boy Scouts, the illegal aliens, the feminists, who do we blame? It's going to be blamed on the government. And it's going to be painful enough to cause a lot of people in government to, be fearful. And they don't want that, and they're trying to hold this together, and they're pasting it together with lies and illusions and smoke and mirrors and doing an extraordinary job of it. But I still look at fundamentals and I think, I don't think they can hold this thing together. I think this has to go down. And if it does, a lot of the things that they're promoting there will be shown to be fraudulent. Insubstantial, fragile, something you can't rely on, and then there you're going to be. I was relying on the government. Now who am I relying on? Who do you rely on that?
And, we also talk about changes. We had a president that was elected for change. We had the administration before was supposed to be there for change, and we got change, but it wasn't for the good. Now we have another
small
president
change.
For change. But change is also painful. Change will be painful.
Yep.
And that's what people don't get. You can't go in and change a whole system around without experiencing some pain, without experiencing some loss. So we might think today, as much as we dislike what's going on and the things that are being handed to us, this is about as best as it's going to be for a while. And,
I'll tell you what, Melody, we're going to have to consider that a little more in a moment. We're going to have to take a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival.
Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I want to remind the listeners we have $710 special today where you will receive 21-ounce silver American Eagles. They're dated 2017. Absolutely beautiful, and we have $25 face value. That's $25 face value of the 90% quarters, brilliant uncirculated. This little package includes all your shipping costs and $710. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
We were talking about Bitcoin earlier in the program. Here's another small article from Time Magazine. And the headline is, Hackers Steal $70 Million in Bitcoin. In a theft of the cryptocurrency mining service, NiceHash, hackers made off with nearly $70 million worth of Bitcoin. Now, that's nowhere near a record. All right, but it's another one of those things that just illustrates your Bitcoin is pretty fragile. I mean, it's just ones and zeros, digits, and it's accessible by people who would like to steal it. And it's probably, all things considered, I'm sure it's easier to steal Bitcoin than it is to rob banks. Go into a bank, you can hold up a bank, you might be able to steal $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000. Maybe $100,000. I don't know. We see movies. I don't know how much you can get. But I think the average bank robbery, they get less than $5,000. They walk in with a gun. They hand the teller a note. They say, put the money in the bag. Don't put the little explosive die device in there. Just put the money in there. They give them some money in the bag, a couple thousand dollars, and the guy leaves with his gun in his pocket, hoping to God he doesn't get shot. No, you've got people who are hacking. I mean, they are simply sitting at their computer keyboard and with a sophisticated knowledge of computer programming and how to crack in, how to hack into the banks or whatever else, they made off with $70 million worth of Bitcoin. I'm not sure, but I don't think there's ever been a robbery of a bank, of a conventional bank, that had, certainly not with gold, and I don't think even with paper dollars. I don't think they've ever lifted $70 million in one shot, unless, of course, it was the government. Now, the government, they can steal $70 million, maybe even $700 million at one time, but ordinary hackers, they can get millions. I think it has to say something. Do I really want to store my wealth in a medium where, for all I know, this might be some high school kids. This could be some high school kids that ripped off $70 million. Is that where you want to put your wealth? These are the kinds of things that I know no one is going to pay any attention to. Because everybody's got Bitcoin fever, but it's a little bit, there's reality here. Got the Bitcoin fever going on. We also have some reality. You know, this is dangerous, ephemeral stuff. Can be made to disappear magically, electronically, mathematically. Strange world we live in.
Yes, we do. And but you know what? A lot of that people just look at, what's that compared to billions and billions of dollars? It's like somebody stole $1,000 out of a million-dollar checking account.
Same.
But you know what? It's 70 million here, 64 million there. You know, it's here, it's there. The risk is there, and that's the whole point. It shows that the risk is there. It's just it's
not only that; it shows people that this can be done. I'm sitting back here and speculating that maybe it was just some clever high school kids, all right, fooling around in the garage that figured out how to steal $70 million. Well, maybe that's complete just fantasy and speculation, but I guarantee you there are other high school kids that heard about this story and said, $70 million? We could buy ourselves our own cars, you know? They're looking at this right now. And they're going to try to steal $50 million or $100 million or $10 million. I don't know how much. And other kids are going to say, yeah, did you see that? Did you see that? And before you know it, you have an army of hackers trying to bust into Bitcoin and grab the loot. And it's going to be encouraged. Every kid, every time we see one of these stories, I mean, $70 million is nothing compared to some of the other stories we've seen about electronic cryptocurrencies being hijacked and hacked and stolen by hackers. It's no big deal, but just the same, for a lot of people, these are desperate times.
And again,
they don't have a job, they don't have any savings, they're deep in debt. I guarantee you some of them are sitting back and saying, "Where? Show me the manual on the computer. I need to find out how to rob a Bitcoin bank or wallet or whatever."
And you know, here's an article, it's out by the New York Post. Americans are spending less at Christmas gifts this year. And, you know, there were several polls asking about people and their holiday shopping plans. And they're looking for smaller gifts. They're looking at price tags. And they're also worrying about how to pay for things. I talked about just a week or so ago where people are still paying off last year's Christmas bills. So again, here's more pressure on people. They're gonna not spend as much. They're gonna worry about how to pay for it. Just 53% of U.S. adults will buy a Christmas gift that costs at least $50 this holiday season. This is according to a new creditcards.com report that polled 1,100 U.S. adults. The survey also found that it is not just those with modest incomes who are thinking twice about whipping out their credit cards. Well over 4 in 10, 44% of the richest respondents, those whose household incomes were $80,000 plus, plan to keep their most expensive holiday gift under $100. Well, there's going to be a lot of disappointed wives out there.
I know. That's the divorce lawyers are out licking their lips. They're saying, there's going to be a lot of business in the first quarter, maybe.
But you know what? There was a creditcards.com, the senior analyst, said he was surprised by the poll results, given that the stock market's recent strength. Supposedly, we have these low unemployment rates. The spending caution, he added, is probably because many workers are pessimistic about their prospects. He thinks that part of what is going on in Americans is that Americans don't see a raise anytime in their future. And when you don't think you're going to make more money in the next year, it will make you spend less on that big holiday ticket item. So another problem, he said, is with the Great Recession still relatively fresh in people's minds, most Americans seem to be planning a frugal holiday. Sweaters, not cell phones. And so it looks like now we can say maybe this is just a changeover of how people are changing their shopping. You know, baby boomers are getting older, maybe not as many kids to buy for and not as many grandchildren and so forth. But the U.S. consumer debt is growing by $500 billion each year, and the stress is beginning to take its toll. So, again,
I have a suggestion for a solution to the Christmas problem. It might be a little too late to implement this year, but maybe we could even, this even goes to an invention, Melody. I have an invention in mind here, and you know how good my inventions are. I'm thinking there's a lot of people who bought the kids toys last Christmas, and the kids got tired of them fairly soon, and they're all they're filling the garage where your car is supposed to be. I'm thinking that there must be, we could invent a little kit that showed people how to clean up the Christmas presents you gave the kids last year, shine them up, and give them again this year. And maybe the kids won't even remember. So, what are you giving me? Big wheel again. No, no, you haven't had a big wheel before. This is a brand new big wheel, see? You could maybe give the kids the same Christmas presents for 2-3 years in a row. What do you think, Moldy?
Perhaps that might work. Perhaps that might work.
You don't sound too enthusiastic.
Well, you know, we're almost at the end of the hour, and I remember watching a video that these parents wrapped up these presents. I don't know, it was kind of like candied camera or something like that. And they gave the children these presents, and in them was like maybe a half-eaten peanut butter sandwich, or, you know, maybe something that was already broke, or maybe it was, you know, just really terrible, terrible gifts. And they'd say to these children, well, go ahead, it's okay to open up a present early. These kids, okay, 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 and they rip open these gifts, and they see this, these toys, and some of them didn't know how to react. A lot of them, and this goes back a long way, because it was Bob Chapman and I shared this. But some of these kids got really angry. I mean, I was shocked at how some of them they threw it down, saying, I don't want that. I don't need, you know, it was just like, I want something. I was little, you know, and now those little kids that was, well, with Bob Chapman was 10 years ago, and they were 8. Now they're 18. So, but.
Now they know how to hack. See, they can get their own Christmas presents. Get out there, get on the computer, take a little initiative. You know.
But, it was sort of a fun but shocking video of how little kiddies are spoiled anymore. But,
well,
but
you
anyway.
Know, Christmas is final exams for the year. And I'm not involved in Christmas in a meaningful way the way I was when I was younger. And I don't mean just as a kid. As an adult, middle-aged, or such sort of thing. Christmas is not for people my age exactly, and I don't get for it. But it's final exams. And a lot of people, I mean, they become ferocious around Christmas time. I am going to have a good Christmas, and if you get my way, I'll strangle you. That's kind of the Christmas spirit a lot of people wind up with. We become desperate and fierce, and we will, by God, enjoy Christmas, or I pity the man who gets in the way of my Christmas celebration. It's a relief sometimes. There's so much stress involved with Christmas that by the time you get done with it, it's something of a relief. You know, maybe for Christmas what you need is sign people up for a shrink. You know, we're going to give you a month of free psychiatric care. For the month of December, you get free psychiatric care. What do you think, Melody?
That might work. But it is true. I mean, it's become so commercialized. Everybody wants to have the perfect Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And really, the perfect Christmas is the Christmas where you truly do spend with family and friends and share mm-hmm. things. And with the less stress, I mean, I get all stressed out just because I bake cookies. I can't imagine, you know, having, you know, kitties and so forth, you know, and the true meaning of Christmas, and it's just a time of year to relax and a time of year to, you know, regather. And
it really does make you want to celebrate New Year's. Yeah. Get through Christmas. New Year's can be a problem also, but if I get through Christmas and New Year's, then I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for whatever 2018 has to offer. If I can get through Christmas and New Year's, I am strong, Melody, and I can do 2018 standing on my head. No matter what kind of trouble they give me, I can handle it if I can get through Christmas and New Year's for in the next couple of weeks. So I suppose Christmas, and here's one in the, what have we got left? 2 minutes. Here's an article from the Washington Post. The headline, Americans are drowning in debt. Here's where they have it worst. Nearly half the residents of Louisiana have debt that's gone into collections, making that state America's capital of past due debt. Nationwide, the data shows that 33% of Americans hold debt that is currently in collection. All right, people are trying to get it out of them, and they're not paying it. The median amount of debt in collections is $1,450. That doesn't impress me as a lot. It doesn't impress me as a dangerous number. But nevertheless, there's a lot of people who are in debt. You were talking about a lot of people haven't even paid off their debt from last Christmas.
Correct.
There's something happening here. A lot of people have to be under stress. And something's got to be done. We've got to change the way we think about Christmas, the way we celebrate Christmas. It can't just be a situation where there's a competition to see who can spend the most money for Christmas. You've got to appreciate something about the family. And, I mean, kids have to appreciate this, and the adults have to appreciate this. And maybe, who knows, maybe that's possible despite all of the single-parent families we have in this country. There are cultural problems here. And we're going to have to work around those cultural problems. And we're going to have to find a system of values that allows us to deal with Christmas in a way that is, sophisticated, genteel, loving, rather than mercenary. And get the commerce out of Christmas, folks. Maybe it'll be a happier time. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.